Mario, for the very nice introduction. Am I audible at the back and on the Zoom? I guess my mic is working. Awesome. Thank you so much. As you can see on my title, I'm going to talk about two things today. One is neural network, and another is field theories. Let me start with a line from Mario's talk today morning, which unconnected pairs of concepts will be investigated together in the next 5 years. When I started my PhD back in 2017 at Northeastern University Theoretical High Energy Physics Group, and later became an affiliated PhD student at the NSF AI Institute for Artificial Intelligence for Fundamental Interactions, I was not exactly hoping that someday I would be investigating the foundations of machine learning and artificial intelligence in the hope to enrich theoretical particle physics, field theory, and maybe someday string theory. I was not. But that's the beauty, that sometimes you can find some links between completely unintersecting pairs of research areas and use one to enrich the other. So those are my affiliations, and I have the two main ingredients of my talk here. This is just a little blob. That's a very small neural network. You can just push some data on one side as inputs, get some output on the other side. I should mention that throughout my talk, I would be focusing on classical neural networks, but hope that someday some of you will come forward and tell me how we can make a cool extension of this work to quantum neural networks and quantum machine learning. And this is a Feynman diagram, literally taken from any quantum field theory textbooks. My talk is going to be based on a brief overview of these two existing papers and a third ongoing work with my advisor, Jim Halvorsen at Northeastern, Matt Schurz at Harvard, Mehmet, and my former friend and PhD student, Keegan at Northeastern. So let's see what we have here. First, all of you are experts on machine learning, so I just wanted to keep this very brief, just the main points. This is the second last talk of the day. I remember that. So let me just briefly remind you guys why we care about deep learning as theoretical particle physicists or, you know, as people in formal field theory or as string theorists. First of all, these are very useful. These are good for optimization techniques to find some answers or solutions when the problem becomes a big data problem. Well, that's good. But then we found that machine learning as an optimization technique is proving to be too powerful. Something about it just says there's a lot underlying, a structure, a science that really needs exploration. It's not just some technique, some toolbox. There is more to it, power to it. And as fundamental physicists, we should be able to look into it using our lens of quantum physics, quantum field theory. We should be able to read it in a way that computer scientists or pure mathematicians might not be able to. So that gives us one advantage over the other the fields in science, that we have some techniques at our disposition that we can use to study machine learning and artificial intelligence as a system. Technically, these are just boxes that generate some functions. You feed in data at one side. These are just real numbers for classical neural networks. And for classical neural networks, you get some functions dependent on the choice of inputs or data on the other side. Again, these are real numbers. And diagrammatically, it is given by a structure like this. You're fitting in real numbers on one side. It is going through many hidden layers. Layers are made of many neurons. And on the other side, you get some outputs, which in this case are real numbers. This example is like the most popular one you can think of among classical networks, the fully connected feedforward one. These functions are generated using some learnable parameters that we call theta. Learnable in the sense, if you train a train a neural network using the learning dynamics of machine learning, these gets updated over time. There are the hyperparameters, and one of the most famous hyperparameter in a neural network architecture, a classical neural network architecture, is the number of neurons in any of the hidden layers. That's denoted by this sign N. It's called the weight. And I will talk about how controlling the value of the neurons in a particular hidden layer can give us functional distributions that behave as field theories. Field theories are Euclidean background. So let me get there gradually. Another point before I get there. If you talk about any hidden layer, the output of that hidden layer, also called the post-activation, is a sum over the contribution of all the neurons in that hidden layer. So if you have n neurons in a particular hidden layer, you are summing over n variables. Now, if you choose your parameters to be independently drawn, then this will become a sum over n independent stochastic variables. That plays a crucial role later on. So the crucial part is this, that neural networks gives us functions, and if you generate the function many times at initialization, discarding the learning dynamics altogether, because we are interested to check the power right from the get-go. So we say that let's forget about training, let's just focus on neural networks as a black box and investigate as much as we can. So let's just look at it as a statistical system. Generate the output many times. You get a functional distribution, and the statistical moments of the functional distribution depends on the choice of the stochastic parameter distributions and the hyperparameters, and choices of activation functions. In this notation, the sigma here is the activation function at any neuron. It can be different at all the neurons. So then this is a black box that gives you a functional distribution, which is all real numbers. This reminded us that if you think about quantum field theory on a Euclidean background, then that too is a statistical distribution in a sense, because Feynman path integral formalism gives you a field distribution here. So then we can borrow this for machine learning, for neural network, and try to understand neural networks using the language of field theory. This was the motivation. And with that, these are the results that we got. First, we found that the outputs as an ensemble behave as field theories, but on Euclidean background. I would use the terms Euclidean field theory or statistical field theory interchangeably. But when I talk about statistical field theories, don't think about the mean field theory assumptions on statistical physics side. Rather, I'm just talking about thermal field theories. In some limits of the architecture, where we can control these limits, actually, at our disposal, we can get field theories where the action or the Lagrangian only has a quadratic term. That's a free field theory without any interaction between the fundamental particles in that theory. Or we can also move away from this limit by changing some parameters and hyperparameters in a controllable fashion. That's up to us, the way we define that neural network when we initialize it on our computers. And doing so will turn on interaction terms. We can cause large deviation or small deviation from these limits. And they would respectively go to non-perturbative field theories using neural network output distributions or weakly coupled field theories using the same. So in this way, we are going to generate statistical or Euclidean field theories out of neural network output distributions. And the terms in the action, the couplings, all of them will depend on the choices of the neural network architecture, the parameter distributions, and hyperparameters. So a class of neural networks will give you a set of different field theories. And each of them may be same. In some limits, some of them may be even identical. There may be crossovers. It's an interesting map. Point to note that when we talk about non-perturbative field theories in theoretical particle physics, those are very difficult systems to study. So this is where we thought that maybe then we can use neural network architectures at initialization to investigate some properties of this. So that would make sure that not just as an optimization technique, but rather even as a physical system, machine learning and neural networks would have something to give back to fundamental physics. How can we do that? So note that neural network output distributions, some stuffs, can be studied using the parameter distributions, the nonlinear or linear activation functions, hyperparameters, and the overall structure, the architecture. We are going to take advantage of that. And we found that using this, we can engineer symmetries, we can study connected correlation functions up to integrals. Using these forms, which are not the connected correlation functions of the fields. Rather, we get the forms in terms of parameter distributions and the architecture. We can construct the partition function of the field theory as a series expansion. And we can also study the locality of the associated field theories via cluster decomposition technique. We would not need to know the action. And this is the most important part here. Because when we are talking about non-perturbative field theories that comes out of neural networks, knowing the action can be difficult. So this is sort of like a bootstrapping program. Depending on time, I might skip this slide, partition function, but I am going to discuss the rest of the steps. But you should ask where I'm trying to get from here. This all looks very good, but what is the future of this? So it does have some implications for formal field theory and particle physics, and also hopefully someday for quantum many-body mechanics, dynamics, but one would need to make sure that the outputs in that case won't just be purely real numbers. Here. So first, we are trying to find neural network architectures, the classical ones, where we can get known Euclidean field theory actions right from the get-go, initialization. And this would be a new way to simulate field theories on a lattice of Euclidean background without involving the learning dynamics. That will save us some computational resources. And also, this will establish a way to study field theories on our computer without using machine learning as just an optimization technique. Then the important part is, if you can satisfy the Osterwalder-Schrader axioms for these Euclidean field theories, then that will indicate that in principle, one can find an analytic continuation to a Lorentzian background, and the output ensembles of the neural networks would correspond to some underlying quantum field theory. Now, given this shape, one can find, in principle, some architectures, more than one, hopefully, which will give us corresponding quantum field theories. And if we can get some known quantum field theories out of neural network output ensembles at initialization, we would get closer to getting some part of the standard model action through neural network initialization on our computer. Yeah, please.
Just could you elaborate the second point a little more?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Just so I know exactly what you mean with the learning dynamics.
Sorry, you want to know particularly about the learning dynamics or this part? What is the question?
Yeah, the learning dynamics in point two, just to be
all right, yeah, sure. So know that there is no test data or train data here. You are just choosing some data as your inputs. You are not training the neural network. You are just evaluating the outputs of the neural network at initialization. So there is no training. You just get the neural network output, but then you keep doing that some large number of times. So you get some statistical distribution out of your neural network outputs, and that creates a functional distribution which behaves like Euclidean field theories on lattice, as in the lattice is the Euclidean space here. So what I mean by bypassing learning dynamics is that when you talk about getting lattice field theories using machine learning, people generally start with a random neural network, then they train to get the right field density. And in that case, people really do not know what is the final parameter distribution at each of the nodes and neurons, what are the values of the weights and biases are at every neuron, when you finally get the right field density. However, if you can get the Euclidean field theories of your choice right at initialization, then you are getting an analytic expression for the neural network architecture that corresponds to that field theory. Does this make sense?
I think I just need to think more about how the parameters really feature in your framework.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. I'll listen a bit more, too.
Sure.
Can I ask a quick one? Is that okay? Can you go to the previous slide?
Yeah.
I think it's the previous one. Yeah, just want to clarify. What do you mean when you talk about, I guess, yeah, the deviations. Small and large deviations lead to these neural network field theories. Deviations in what here? What are you talking about?
Yeah, good question. So I'm going to talk about this in a bit more details later on.
Okay, if you're going to talk about it, yeah. Then
just one line answer would be that there are certain restrictions on the neural network architecture that gives you free field theories. And those restrictions on the choice of architecture parameters or hyperparameters will cause the deviations.
Right.
So there is some scaling or some parametric deviation here.
Okay. So it's deviations in the hyperparameters.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, perfect.
So do the field theories also depend on the structure of the input data set?
Good question. In principle here, no, because we consider, and I will show why, here we consider that the data are just a bunch of real numbers, and they're literally points taken from a Euclidean space. So the field theories that neural network output ensembles are defining are defined over all of the Euclidean space. However, they're evaluated on the input points. So depending on what input points you have taken or what data you have taken, the value of your field is going to change, definitely. But the structure of the field theory, the action of the field theory, is not going to depend on the choice of the data.
I see. So if there's like,
this may become clear as I go later on the slide. So feel free to stop me and ask after 5 more slides.
Okay.
This is not clear.
Sure, thanks.
Let me go ahead in the interest of time. So to briefly summarize, I already mentioned that this is based on these three works, and very grateful to my collaborators here. But there are some related works. These three are based on the language of pure mathematics and computer science, actually these four. And these other three papers on the top takes more about concepts, more about field theory concepts and some concepts from non-perturbative field theory, this paper in particular, and they use it to understand neural networks and machine learning. So if you're interested in use of field theory for machine learning, please go and check these. Let's get ahead. So here is the outline of my talk. First, I'm going to talk about how field theories arise in neural networks. There are three particular cases here. One is the free field theory, and then from there, we will go on to Wilson and effective field theories by small deviations, and I will explain that. And then the non-perturbative field theories from there by large deviations. And I would also explain why the choice of the data does not affect the field theory that arises here. And then, in particular, I would focus on this aspect, non-perturbative field theories in neural networks, and discuss a couple of properties studied using the neural network parameter and architecture framework. The first one would be symmetries, because we all care about symmetries, and we find that we can engineer symmetries at will. And the second one would be getting the structures of the connected parts of the correlation functions, and I will explain why this is important. And using this, there are two other aspects, studying the locality of the theory. This is, of course, very important, whether you care about quantum many-body dynamics or quantum fields, this really matters. And finally, getting a handle on the partition function. And this slide will depend on how much time I have. Now here, first, field theories in neural networks. So let me talk about this, how we get free field theories. What are free field theories? So field theories are the underlying structures that define most of our theoretical particle physics results. Also, field theories are basically the maths we use to understand the standard model of our universe. Here, we are getting free field theories where fundamental particles do not talk to each other by making sure that two constraints on the neural network architecture are satisfied. First, you have to make sure that you take the architecture weed or the number of neurons in a particular layer to be infinity. So this is theoretically possible. In principle, you can take the weed of any neural network on your computer to be pretty large, like 1,000 or 10 to the power 4, and you should still be able to get results similar to the free field theory limit. We have checked this. So in principle, it is possible to reach this free field theory limit on your computer. It's not just all hypothetical. So in addition to this constraint, you have to make sure that each of your parameter at all the neurons, like all of them, have to be drawn independently of each other, and they have to be also identically drawn from each other. So this is a crucial part, independent and identically distributed parameters for the neural network architecture. In short, we call it IID. With these two restrictions, we get a neural network output on any given layer to be a sum over an infinite number of independent random variables. And that is where the statistics comes in and says that that has to be a draw from some Gaussian distribution because of central limit theorem. Infinite number of independent variables summed together is always a draw from some Gaussian distribution. So the neural network output, which is a function dependent on the choice of the data, is some draw from some Gaussian process in this case. So this was cool. Then we wanted to see how deep was this connection. Was this just like a Gaussian to Gaussian correspondence, or could we extend this to something further? So to do that, we had to make some connections. First of all, we wanted to get the partition function of these field theories, or at least the actions. At that point, we did not care about the non-perturbative regimes of these field theories. So we were caring about the partition function, exact form of the actions, or effective actions more. So we found that the inputs should be treated as external space, position space, or momentum space points. So you are considering the inputs of the neural networks to be continuous variables, literally the space-time, but on Euclidean background. And if you do so, then the value of the neural network output here would become the value of the free field corresponding to the choice of the input points. But field theories are not defined by the background. Field theories are defined by the nature of the interactions, the operators themselves. So the structure of the data becomes irrelevant here. But point to note, we are assuming that this is a Euclidean background. Does this answer your question?
For example, so what happens if my input data point has some structure? Will it change or not?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
What happens if your input data point has some structure? Say it's around, I don't know,
it's like on a torus or something.
It doesn't matter.
I see. So your question is like, what if your background, like the external space or space-time point is restricted to some torus or some particular manifold?
Exactly.
Okay, good question. So we have not explored that. That is a different formulation of the correspondence. In this particular case, we assume this to be a completely analytic background existing everywhere.
Uniformly distributed. Oh, okay.
Okay, coming back here, the kernel or the two-point statistics of the neural network outputs would correspond to the Feynman propagator in field theory language, and the log likelihood would correspond to the free action. So using this dictionary, we could define the field density, not just the output density. We are treating the neural network output as a draw from some field right now. So we are considering the neural network, which is a black box, has some mechanisms going on the inside, but on the outside, on the very outside, right after the final layer, where you have considered infinite number of neurons in that very final layer, and all of the inner mechanisms to have IIT parameters, is going to give you a free field theory on the boundary. And your neural network, which depends on the choice of inputs on the other side, is actually blind to all the inner mechanisms and only cares about the field theory that exists on the outside, very outside. So this is going to be the field density. This quadratic operator depends on the structure of the kernel or the two-point statistics. Point to note, if you know the choices of the parameter distributions of your architecture and the nonlinear linear activation functions, other hyperparameters, then you can obtain the expression for the two-point statistics of kernel. And you can get the corresponding expression for the quadratic operator as well. So up to the free field theory, you can get the exact action of this field theory. But then what happens if we want to go somewhere else and explore other parts of the neural network architecture? Because these are just very special points in the whole map of the architecture. So there are other regimes of the architecture where you do not have infinite weight, you have finite weight. You also do not have independent or identical parameter distributions always at the initialization. You can come up with any kind of parameter distributions at your choice when you write down the neural network on your computer. What's going to happen then? So it depends on the deviation from the central limit theorem. These two together will give you the free field theory. Suppose you keep the weight very large and finite, but you just disrupt this. You have completely deterministic value of parameter at each neuron of your neural network. So that's going to literally be the opposite of IIT parameter distributions. That's going to be a very large deviation from the central limit theorem. And that is going to take you to the non-perturbative field theory regime. Now let's see. Let's check both of the deviations, the small ones and the big ones, and then I will take questions. So here, I'm going to talk about the small deviations from the central limit theorem or the neural network Gaussian process limit. There are two ways to achieve this. You have to make sure that the overall contribution of these two constraints or the violations of these two constraints remain small. So one was infinite weight, you make it some finite large weight. And the other one, which was IIT parameter, you can make it some correlated parameter distribution. But you have to ensure that the amount of correlation in the parameter distribution is small. So you can just add some correlation term in the parameter distributions, which is perturbative. And combinations of these two will also give you small deviations, proper combinations, of course. And this is something that we should be able to describe as perturbative expansions around the free field theory limit. So this was our assumption, and we wanted to test this. So to make sure we can test this on a computer by running some neural network simulations and making some predictions, we had to extend our dictionary. Some things are still the same. The input is still the same, external position space or momentum space, but the kernel can now be the exact propagator depending on the architecture because you do not know what kind of effective field theories you get. Depends on the choice of architecture if you explore. Also, it can be the free propagator. So this is a difference than the known quantum field theories that we learn from textbooks. The outputs now become the values of interacting fields evaluated on the choice of inputs. There would be non-Gaussianities, which are correction terms to the Gaussian action or the Gaussian distribution. And those are going to correspond to field interactions. Coefficients of those terms are going to correspond to coupling strengths. And depending on your choice of architecture, you will get different kind of interactions and different values of coupling strengths. But you can't actually predict what these values are going to be. You have to write down a neural network architecture, evaluate the effective action, then check what is the value, corresponding value of the coupling strengths. And the log probability or log likelihood is now going to correspond to the effective action. So all good, we have a dictionary, we can write down some stuff, and we did. This is the original quadratic action. And now there are going to be some correction terms there, which are higher order terms. We call them interaction terms, I'm sure you all know. I'm assuming everyone is familiar to field theory to some extent. These are going to be higher order terms. These can be cubic, quartic, sextic, fifth order, and so on. And then one can study the structure of the statistical moments of neural network experiments. That is, you just initialize the neural network on your computer many times, compute the statistical moments, and then study those. And studying them sometimes will tell you that all the odd point correlation functions, sorry, all the odd point interactions might have to vanish identically. That happens when you choose mean-free parameter distributions for the neural networks, because in that case, all your odd statistical moments are zero identically. So these would then lead to some leading order non-zero contributions, so these coefficients have to vanish. Also note that I have defined this effective action term here, the additional term here, in terms of completely local polynomial terms. Like each of the outputs are evaluated at the same point. This could be very different. This term here could be fx times fy times fz. And there would be some architectures which would be well fitted by the first kind of term here. And there may be other architectures which are well described by fx, fy, fz. Some of them might be well described by f square x, fy kind of terms. So the choice of the FT actions should be verified by running some neural network experimental computation of the statistical moments. Those will only tell us what are the right interaction terms in the effective action. And this paper over here gives a non-perturbative field theoretic approach for these small deviations from NNGB. Now, this whole description has a lot to offer to the machine learning community, because when you are looking at the machine learning framework, they have a large number of parameters, and it's a very complex system because of large number of degrees of freedom. But if you use the effective field theory framework to study that, then, as you guys might figure out already, not all of the interaction terms here are going to be equally important. Some of them are going to contribute more, and some are going to contribute less. So you would have a very succinct description on this side. And they can tell you a lot, like the symmetries, the connected correlation functions, amplitudes, and stuff. And you would want to study those neural network limits, small deviations, using EFT framework rather than the machine learning framework. And this is one of the cool examples where theoretical particle physics is offering something back to machine learning community. I find it very interesting. Now let's get here. So now that we have the effective action, we can use Feynman diagrams to predict the correlation functions of the neural network outputs. For example, if you did not have this term, and not this one, just these two, and suppose lambda is a more relevant operator than kappa, then you could have the four-point function up to leading order given by this Feynman diagram. You could run the neural network statistical moment on your computer at initialization and check if that statistical moment, experimental estimation of the statistical moment, matches this prediction given by the Feynman diagram. You can use this sort of comparisons to determine whether this effective action is a good match for that neural network architecture. So here comes a bit of phenomenology. And the third more important topic, and after that I will take questions on this section, is that what happens when you take large deviations away? Because this is going to be the more important part of the neural network architecture map, where you have small weight or large correlation among the parameter distributions, even at initialization, or combinations of these. Because you can't always stay perturbatively close to the NNGP limit. So here you are going to violate the central limit theorem governing the Gaussianity by large amounts. Then the functional distribution that arises out of your neural network output ensembles can no longer be studied as perturbative expansions around some free field theory. It becomes non-perturbative. So here we are going to take advantage of the fact that now you should have small number of degrees of freedom if you have small weight, and also if you have some large parameter correlations. Because literally here you are reducing the number of degrees of freedom. So then we can go to the framework given by the neural network architecture, parameter and hyperparameters, and study some of the stuffs about the field theory using that framework. Here, this is the neural network output as a field. Although I have the subscripts, the parameter and the hyperparameter here, this guy actually doesn't care about the choice of the parameter distributions and the hyperparameter. All it knows is the partition function and the action. But this over here is the sum of the contribution from all the neurons in the final layer. This knows about everything, every choice of parameter distribution, every activation function. This is the bulk story. So we can use the bulk story to study some of the things on the boundary field theory. Here, this is my notation. This is the output of the ith neuron in the final hidden layer. And after that, we sum them up together, normalize appropriately to have the output. And if you're interested about the normalization, ask me afterwards. So we are going to do this, exactly this. We are going to study this neural network output ensemble, aka the field theory, using the architecture framework. Here. So this is, if we want to study the correlation functions in terms of the field framework, we would need to know the free partition function. We would also need to know the action. And in this case, we don't actually know that when we have a non-perturbative field theory. So we are going to the alternative framework where the same correlation functions are now expectation values evaluated on the product of the neural network outputs, written in terms of the output of the neurons, the parameter distributions over all of the neurons. So this might not always be integrable perfectly, but nonetheless, we would be able to study some of the properties. As I will discuss later, you can study symmetries, some scaling of the connected parts of the correlation function, and I will define what a connected part of the correlation function is, and also locality by cluster decomposition technique. Now, if you use this structure to study these properties of the field theory, then you don't need to know the action for the field theory. Any questions at this point?
Yeah. This is just another clarifying question. I mean, when you were talking about the free field theories earlier and the parameters that are essentially drawn independently from Gaussian distribution,
doesn't have to be Gaussian. It can be any distribution.
But as long as it's independent, right?
And identically drawn.
Right. So the same distribution for each, right?
Yeah.
So is that, I'm just trying to understand it, is that what makes the fact that they're independent and identical, is that what sort of makes the theory free? Does it reflect not having any interactions? If you want interactions, you need these non-Gaussianities or sort of different distributions. Is that what it is?
Yeah, good, yes. But you also have to ensure that there are infinite number of or asymptotically large number of such parameters or nodes. The number of parameters depend on number of neurons or nodes in the final.
Right.
Yeah, but you are essentially right. If you introduce some correlation or some entanglement between the choice of the parameter distributions between the neurons, that's going to lead to interactions between the different fields at different sites. Okay. I mean, that's going to lead to particle interactions in the field theory picture.
Got it. Okay. So it'll reflect field theories with interaction terms, essentially the action.
Okay. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. No problem. Any other questions?
Yeah, just one small question. So in Wilsonian EFT, so your parameter distribution.
Sorry, I cannot hear you.
Sorry. Okay, so in Wilsonian EFT, your parameter distribution is slightly correlated, right? And that means that your output is no longer from a Gaussian distribution. So
I could not catch the last line. Could you please
Okay. So in Wilsonian EFT, your parameter distribution is slightly correlated, right? Yeah. So that means I think your output distribution is no longer from a Gaussian distribution.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So is that the reason why you have an extra del S term?
Yeah, right. Like it was small corrections to the Gaussian action. So we could write down the leading order correction terms similar to perturbative quantum mechanics.
Okay. Yeah.
I should mention, I realize that I'm running late. So if you want me to stop at any point, please let me know. I have 3 more slides after this.
We started, I think, 7 or 8 minutes late. So you can still continue 10 minutes or so.
All right. Thank you so much.
Together with questions.
All right. Please give me a 3 or 4 minutes heads up if you want me to stop at any point. Thank you. So let me discuss some of the properties we can study for the non-perturbative field theories using the neural network machine learning or machine framework, the architecture framework. First one, symmetries, because symmetries are very cool and they're also very important. So we found out that symmetries, something that we cannot learn, something that we cannot study if we do not know the structure of the action, can actually be deduced by studying the symmetries of the correlation functions and also by studying the symmetries of the parameter distributions. And how so? Here it is. The product of the density and the field measure overall remains invariant as long as the correlation functions are invariant under some transformation. And the transformations of the correlation functions can be absorbed into transformations of the neural network parameters. So if you can control the transformations of the parameters, you can actually control the symmetries of this product. Under the assumption that this measure is invariant, you can also then control the symmetries of the action. So this was all cool, but we wanted to see some real-life examples. We investigated a bit more, and we found that you can actually control the symmetries of the neural network input layer and output layer. That is this layer, which acts on the neural network data directly, and this layer, which gives you the neural network outputs. That respectively leads to spatial symmetries and internal symmetries of the field. And we also found some real-life examples. Suppose you come up with, let's talk about the input one first, spatial symmetries. Suppose we want to come up with spatial rotational symmetry. That would mean that if we rotate the inputs to the neural networks by some means, then overall the field theory should be invariant. We can actually find the first linear layer parameters to be rotationally invariant, and any transformation on the data will then get absorbed or get canceled by the transformations, and the corresponding transformations of the weights and biases, and overall your neural network field theory is going to be invariant under some such special rotations. And similarly, one can also find special translations. So that leads to Euclidean invariance. And on the other hand here, to study some of the internal symmetries of the field, we found SOD, SUD, also symplectic groups. This is how you do it. You have to make sure that the final output layer weights and biases, these are going to be invariant under the transformations. So if you choose these to be drawn from some rotationally invariant distributions, like Gaussian distributions, then any transformation on the output by some element chosen from rotation groups are going to act on the weights and biases first, and they're going to get absorbed in the transformations of the weights and biases. Overall, the field action is going to be invariant. In the interest of time, I'm not going to elaborate this more, but if you have questions, please ask me afterwards. Then the next important part is, we wanted to know the structures of the connected parts of the correlation functions. So what does that mean? The connected parts of the correlation functions mean that if you could write down the correlation function on statistical moments in the basis given over the neural network final layer neurons, so there would be n number of neurons in that basis, then the most diagonal part, get rid of all the off-diagonal elements by some means or other, and only the diagonal part remains, that diagonal part corresponds to the connected correlation function. So we want to study the connected correlation functions of the field theory because their structure or relative scalings tells us about the relative importance between the different interaction terms that arise if we knew the action. So we wanted to get a handle on that using the architecture framework, and we found that you can write down the cumulant or connected correlation function generating functional of the field theory story in terms of expressions in the architecture framework. So this is the field, this is a sum over the neuron contributions, and now let us consider the non-perturbative field theory story where we have a small finite weight. We also have parameter correlations. These are going to cause us parameter correlations. So no longer you have independent parameter distributions over all the neurons. And then this, which is the cumulant generating functional of the field, given in terms of source functions and the connected correlation function of the field, these are the inputs. And this literally does not know anything of the choice of parameter distributions or activation functions, has an alternative expression given by the log of the expectation value over this probability density over all the neurons, which are correlated now, along with this exponential where we have written down the neural network output in terms of the neuron contributions. And there is also this source term here. We found that in the particular case where we have no parameter correlation and all the non-Gaussianity is due to finite weight, you have a one-to-one correspondence between the order of the correlation functions on the field theory story and the neuron side. But if you have non-Gaussianity, non-perturbativeness, due to both the reasons, parameters are correlated as well as you have finite weight, then each of the field-connected correlation functions become aware of all the inside bulk story because then it receives contributions from the connected correlation function of all the neurons. So this gives you ways to study the connected correlation function. And I will discuss the last topic today. We use the expressions for the connected correlation functions to get an estimate on the locality of these field theories. The way locality is defined in field theory is the following. This is the connected correlation function. Now take any two subsets of the input points, the data to the neural network, to be infinitely apart. Then this connected correlation function should decay exponentially or faster. In that case, it's a local field theory. So if you have this alternate expression given in the architecture framework, you can study whether this has an exponential falloff or if it does not even die out. So by studying some of the things in the parameter and architecture story, you can determine other properties on the field theory side, such as how local or non-local your theory is, what the symmetries are, and so on. Let me just summarize. This was my last slide, but I will just skip it. But if anyone is interested, please ask me later. So first, the neural network output ensembles corresponds to field theories, but they also have the description given by architecture and parameter distributions, hyperparameters, and activation functions. We get field theories in all three limits. You get free field theories, effective field theories, and non-perturbative, non-Lagrangian with action unknown field theories in these three subsections of the architecture parameters and hyperparameters. Now we are giving something back to machine learning community. You have infinitely large number of parameters in the GPL limit as you go towards GPL limit, but you have a very finite set of interaction terms that describe the same system. This is in the field theory action framework. On the other hand, when you are in the small weight and large parameter correlations regime, you get the power to describe some properties of the non-perturbative field theory using the neural networks at initialization. So you are not using optimization. You are studying the non-perturbative field theory using neural network as a framework. So this is a different way to contribute towards fundamental physics using neural networks and machine learning as physical systems. And finally, as I discussed, these are the properties that I just described. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for the really interesting talk.
Thank you.
I'm not really familiar with this field, but I did see that you put a reference at one point that I've seen before by Shoyaida, this book that they also brought out recently, The Principles of Deep Learning Theory.
Yeah.
And I once flipped through it, also saw some Feynman diagrams, Wick rotations in there. So I thought I'd ask whether there are any big differences between your work and that work, or whether it's very similar. Do you work together even?
So these are completely different. That's a good question. Completely different frameworks to find connections between field theories and neural networks. They also study learning dynamics at some point. The way we get field theories using neural networks at initialization is different. We use a different limit. We use the number of neurons in one particular hidden layer or on the final output layer and use that to control the amount of Gaussianity, whether we are getting free theory or interacting terms and so on. And in that particular book, they study a combination of the number of hidden layers as well as the number of neurons in each of the hidden layers and use that as their parametric control over free field theory or perturbative field theory or non-perturbative field theory. As far as I am aware, they actually do not use neural networks at initialization to study non-perturbative field theories. So this aspect is completely independent and new. But if you talk about just effective field theory rules, they do use some of that. But the regimes, the way we control effective field theories coming out of neural network ensembles is very different.
Hi. I had a question about, so in your dictionary, what would you think the learning dynamics in the neural network side corresponds to in the effective field theory description?
Great question.
Is there even a connection?
Great question. So as you notice, I have been talking about neural networks on Euclidean background. And the moment you involve learning dynamics, time comes in. So then you can't stay in the Euclidean background anymore. Or if you want to stay, then time has to correspond to some learning time, evolution time has to correspond to some other quantity. It can be similar to RGflow. And I would actually suggest to look into this particular paper. They also discuss field theoretic approaches, and they discuss what can happen if you talk about learning dynamics. We did not explore this, but one can also think of learning as some sort of a symmetry breaking principle, because supervised learning, for example, will take you from some random value of the neural network output and then flows towards some fixed value of the neural network output. That becomes similar to starting with the value of the neural network field as anything that depends on the choice of the inputs. And then finally, you are getting to vacuum expectation value in some sense. But that is just an analogy.
Hi. Thanks so much for the talk. Thanks. Could you elaborate a bit more on your last point towards the end about how the more parameters you have in the neural network and the Gaussian process limit, the fewer relevant interactions there's going to be in the field theory action? Like, could you elaborate a bit on this about like the applications to like future work, like in the machine learning community?
That's a good question. So I have not explored that much, but this is a cool application. This one here, right? So, right? This is related to the question that you asked. So as you know that if you consider gradient descent and starting with an initialized neural network, which is very close to the Gaussian process limit, and then train with L2 loss, the combination of gradient descent and L2 loss preserves the close to Gaussian process nature. So in that case, at every time step of training, you should be able to define the field theory using effective field, you should be able to define the output ensemble using effective field theory language. That's one application I can think of, but more than that doesn't come to my mind right now.
Thank you.
Further questions? Okay, if not, then thank you again.
Thank you so much.